Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like now to welcome, joining us by phone, Ziad Abbas. He is a Palestinian journalist and community activist, and he's going to be speaking here in Santa Fe on April 23rd, that's Thursday, about the about a lot of things, which we're going to be talking about in just a moment. And I'd like to welcome Jeff Haas, who is with the group Another Jewish Voice of Santa Fe. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us here.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with you, Jeff Haas. Another Jewish Voice of Santa Fe is a relatively new group. What's it all about?
Well, we came into being in January, in large part in response to the Israeli invasion of Gaza and the methods that were used by Israel, which were publicized around the world. And I think many of us who had been suspicious of Israelis' activities for a long time but didn't really want to speak out and criticize Israel, all of a sudden it was too much to bear. And we felt that there was such inhumane use of U.S. weapons, such phosphorus bombs, cluster bombs, the deliberate destruction of fields, and the murder of 1,400 Palestinians by weapons mostly supplied by the United States, that we felt we needed to call attention to what Israel is doing and the fact that the United States is arming them.
And so this is part of a very long history, which I thought we could talk about today with Ziad Abbas, because I think many Americans might have sympathies one way or another, but many Americans really don't know much about the whole situation at all. I thought we could start with the word Nakba, which means catastrophe, which is a word that is used to define a particular time, place, and event. Ziad Abbas, tell us more about that.
Actually, you are right. I find out through my experience and that by studying here and traveling around, speaking around Palestine and other issues in this world, I find out that the American people, they are not aware of what's going on in Palestine. They are not aware for what's going on in the ground there. Even they are not aware of their foreign policy of their country. So the moment you mention Palestine, they have many people, even students, sometime in high school, they have no idea about Palestine. The moment you mention Jerusalem, directly they react and they say Israel. And this is the way it's related, and the way how they were educated in schools, because here the curriculums, and especially about the history, they still believe that Columbus discovered America. And they still teach that Columbus discovered America, which no Native American are living here before. And this is related to the media. It's controlling everything here, and it's biased. They educate, and they tell the story only about Israeli perspective, and it serves the Israeli goals. Palestine, I can say, only few American, few organizations, few groups, even despite the fact since Gaza attack last January until now, I can see some changes a little bit, some promising changes happened where the people start learning a little bit or aware a little bit for what's going on. But when I speak about all the American community, yes, they are really far from what's going on in the Middle East, not just only in Palestine, even from other issues like Iraq, Afghanistan, and other parts of the world. And for us, this history, which is like, you don't speak about even like Iraq only in 91, the attack on 91 and 2003, but you speak about 61 years for Palestinians living under the Israeli occupation since the Nakba, since the catastrophe, since 1948, and before that during the British Mandate, but at least since 1948, the people, they are not aware. Even the moment you mention about refugees, the American people, they are what? 7 million Palestinian refugees, where they are. We didn't hear about this. We have no idea. Something like this. Absolutely, what Jeff said, that it's important that the American people in general, they need to take this kind of initiative and take a stand toward this issue and to bring the truth to the people in the ground in the United States of America. At the same time, I can say like another Jewish voice or alternative Jewish voice, it's coming out right now to raise their voices against what Israeli occupation doing on the ground against the Palestinian people.
So what actually happened in 1948 from the Palestinian perspective?
What happened in 1948, it was like the conclusion of the Zionist plan, which was started in 18th century, where to bring, to have a homeland for the Jewish people. And they were like the plan, it started, even some immigrants came to Palestine, according to the Zionist plan, in the end of 1870s. And the first settlement, actually, it was in 1882. And the name of the settlement called Petah Tikva, and the original name of the Palestinian name, it's called Mlabis, which was 1882. More than 100, almost 30 years, this settlement. So the plan, it was long time ago by the Zionist movement. In 1897, when the Zionist conference held in Basel in Switzerland, and there were three proposals to have to be discussed there and to choose a country where the Jewish people will move there and start their homeland, and they were the three proposals, they were Argentina, Uganda, and Palestine. So for our luck as a Palestinian, we got we were chosen by the Zionist conference in 1897. And since that period, actually, the Jewish immigrants start coming to Palestine, and in different, like, sometime few thousands, sometime 25,000 coming together and start to live in Palestine. There were Jewish people, no doubts, there were Jewish people living in Palestine for a long time. Palestine in general is like a place for the Muslims, the Arabs, the Palestinians, and a place for other Palestinian Christians. And there were Jewish people living in Palestine long time ago in the history. They are living with Palestinians, the three religions, they were living together. But the Zionist plan used the religion here to encourage the Jewish people to move to Palestine. And in the beginning of 19th century, which new immigrants started coming to Palestine after we approached 1917, especially November 2nd, when Balfour promised the land, promised the Zionist movement, actually, or Zionist leaders, that he will give them Palestine to start their homeland. And the whole story in 1948, it was a conclusion for all this kind of plans. From 18th century until 1948, which Palestine, it's a land for people, for land without people, for people without land. And this is the myth, the main myth, like Palestine, no one lived there, and this should be for the Jewish people. And according to Ilan Babeh's book, Ilan Babeh, he's an Israeli professor, and he wrote his book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. What happened in 1948, it's the Nakba, it's the catastrophe, it's the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. When the Zionist gangs, Zionist groups, they were cleansed over 700,000 Palestinians from their original villages, 531 villages destroyed. And the more than 700,000 Palestinian refugees right now became over 7 million Palestinian refugees. And the people, like, they were uprooted from their homeland, they moved, and the international community took the initiative to relieve the Palestinian refugees, and they started the refugee camps. And till now, we have the Palestinian refugees. And me personally, actually, I was born in the Hesha refugee camp in Bethlehem. I grew up in the refugee camp in Bethlehem, and I'm struggling right now not to die in the refugee camp. I want to be equal like everyone. I want to have the right to choose where I want to live, and I deserve to have my right to return back to my homeland. What and happened to me until now, it's a result for what happened in 1948.
And we'll talk about the right of return, because that's a big subject and something that you'll be talking about in your talk. But I wanted to ask you first, what happened in 1967? That's another landmark year.
In 1967, between 1948 and 1967, the Palestinian people, that they were like waiting for the international community, for the international public opinion to do something to justify them, take them back to their homeland. And the Palestinians, they were very weak in this stage, because West Bank became under the Jordanian rules, controlled by the Jordanian authority, and Gaza Strip became controlled by the Egyptian rules. So the Palestinians, they were controlled by different kind of regimes in the Arab world and Israel. In 1948, that the Palestinians stayed there And the Israelis couldn't kick them out, actually. They stayed there, and they were they applied for Israeli ID card, or the Israeli incubation gave them the Israeli ID card, which is different from the other Israelis. And here what Israel succeeded to put the Palestinian in different categories, West Bank and Gaza Strip, Palestine in 1948, and the Palestinians, they are living in the diaspora. What happened in 1967 with the Arab armies, Arab regimes, when they took the initiative during Abdel Nasser period to liberate Palestine and to stop the oppression and to end the occupation of Palestine, and the war started, of course, in 1967, and of course, there were a plan by the Zionists, not the Arabs start the war, maybe, the moment, but there were a plan by the Zionists to have all Palestine, the historic Palestine, to be the Jewish, the homeland for the Jewish people. And this is not, it's clear in their literature about the Zionist literature where they want to have Palestine, even part of the other Arab world. So, as a result of 1967 war, the West Bank became, and Gaza Strip became under direct military occupation, including East Jerusalem. So all historic Palestine became under Israeli military occupation, including Sinai from Egypt, including Golan Heights, which is still until now Golan under military occupation, and north of which is part of Syria. So as a result of 1967, it's another kind of catastrophe. The first catastrophe, the main catastrophe, happened in 1948, and in 1967 another catastrophe where all Palestinian people living inside Palestine, they became under direct military occupation. At the same time, the third Nakba, the third catastrophe happened, which some people, of course, even some writers, they speak about it. It was in 1993 during Oslo Agreement. Oslo Agreement just became like a catastrophe for the Palestinian people.
Now, I don't know if anybody talks about it, but there seem to be parallels between what the Nazis did to European Jews and what the Israelis did to the Palestinians. And I'm not talking about death camps because that didn't happen and that's not parallel, but, you know, the ghettos, the rounding up of people, the confiscation of their property and so on. It seems like in service of what is by many considered a noble ideal, they kind of did what was done to them. How do you see that?
Actually, when we go back to the history, it's not only what happened during the Second World War. In the history of the human being, when the victim became a victimizer, they know how to hurt. At the same time, they create their own excuses for what they are doing. And this is what happened with the Israelis. I can say part of the Jewish people, they were victims for what happened during the Second World War, during the Nazi period. And part of the victims became a victimizers, which I mean the Israelis and the Zionists. They became a victimizers. Even Zionism, it was long time ago before the Nazists. And if you go back to the fascism, think about it, like reading about fascism and Zionism, you'll see the similarity in the principles. And here's what happened exactly. I mean, I remember even me personally, I read a lot about the Holocaust. I read a lot about the Auschwitz and the camps in Austria and in Poland. And I was in a camp, similar camp. I was in the jail surrounded by fences. I was tortured personally by the victims or the survivors of the Holocaust. They tortured the other people, and they did the same. We are not speaking almost the same. No, it's the same. And here, when the victim became a victimizer, even they can invent their own styles to, especially to persecute or torture other people. And what happened in Gaza recently in January, it's not something new for the Palestinian people. I know in this world, maybe many people, they were shocked. This is Israel. This is the only democracy in the Middle East. They are the victims of the Holocaust. No, they are doing that in Gaza. But for us, as Palestinians, we know that even before the Holocaust, the history, the ethnic cleansing policy was started long time ago, before 1948, but during the 1948, the plan started before that. And during 1948 became in the ground, 700 people uprooted and pushed out, and many others, they were killed, massacres, Deir Yassin, etc. So what happened in Gaza recently, it's not something surprising us. We are living under this since long time, since 61 years, and we're still expecting more. It will come in the future. And here, about, like, psychologically, when we think about people, they were tortured. some people, they take the initiative to struggle in a peaceful way to stop that, to end the suffering of other people. Other people, they take the initiative to revenge. And here the Israelis, I can say the Zionist movement, what they are doing, they are against the Palestinian people. We Palestinians, we have nothing to deal with for what happened in the Holocaust. They were the German, the Nazis, they did that for them. Why we paid the price as a Palestinian? Why became we became a victim for, of the victims, let us say it like this. But the victims here became a victimizer. And for me right now, when I speak or in my struggle, I am a victim right now, but I don't want to be a victimizer in the future. Right. For this reason, we think about like a solution and work on that for justice for everyone, because we don't want to approach the stage we'll find ourselves as a victimizer, and we are learning from the history. This is the problem with the Israelis. They don't read the history very well. They don't learn from the history. I speak about Israel, I mean the occupation. Of course, there are some Jewish people, there are some Israelis. They took the initiative and they take a stand toward justice, and they try to bring justice for the Palestinians. But Israelis in general, and especially the politicians, they don't learn the history. And here it's the people, when they have the power in their hand, they don't care about international public opinion, or they don't care about the victims, only they care about their own interests.
We're talking to Siad Abbas. He is a Palestinian journalist, filmmaker, speaker, community activist, and he's going to be speaking on Thursday, April 23rd at the Center for Spiritual Living here in Santa Fe. So tell us about the refugee camp where you were born and raised. What is it like? What is it like to live, to eat, sleep, go to school, work? Tell us about your life there.
First of all, I'm like, as a Palestinian refugee, I'm not speaking just about myself. I speak about millions of Palestinian refugees and different generations. They find themselves growing up in a refugee camp. And for me as a Palestinian refugee, when I was a child, I was missing the basic needs, to survive, actually. We were dependent on the United Nations. We were waiting in lines to receive the food from United Nations. We were seven people. My name is Ziyad, and mean in Arabic additional, extra. And it means like my family. I came by mistake. I'm the youngest one in my family. So we were seven people living in small room, like 81 square feet, 9 feet by 9 feet. Seven people living in this small room. And we were dependent on public toilets, each 25 rooms, which mean each 25 families, they were dependent on two toilets. And so I can say, by being a refugee, you are living in a waiting culture. All the time you need to wait. You are waiting to return back to your homeland. You are waiting to use the toilet. You are waiting to get the water, to drink water. You are waiting to receive the food from United Nations. All the time you are waiting. And when you grow up, for example, you don't have the opportunity to choose what you want to be, what you want to do in your life. And for example, I didn't choose to be a political activist because I hate politics. But in our cases in refugee camp, politics choose us, and you don't have another choice. Only you need to struggle to challenge your daily life, because the Israeli army, they are disturbing everything in your life. They attack your house. They arrest your brother. I speak even when I was a child. Arrest your brother. You want to blame the streets, the oases, and the camp, which you don't have a playground. You want to blame the street. All the time, the army disturbing your game as a child. So you start reacting. So I was in jail the first time. I was arrested by the Israeli army. I was almost 14 years old because I was throwing stones in that period. And here you react as a human being. Later on, when I grew up, graduated from United Nations School, which you don't have central heating and you don't have even air conditioning during the summer. Like these days now in California, for example, the temperature is up till 90. In Palestine, so like in our situation, it's a disaster. You don't have anything because you don't have electricity in the camp. Right now, we have electricity, but the electricity working in the summer and winter, it's not easy. Sometimes you miss the electricity. Our water, the same. In winter, it's okay with water. In summer, we don't have water because the Israelis, they are controlling the water. 82% of the water goes to the Israeli settlements, and 18% goes to the Palestinian people, to the indigenous people, to the original people. And we in my refugee camp, we don't receive water in a regular way. So your daily life, everything you challenge in your daily life, it's to survive, it's the daily challenge for you as a human being. We are around 12,000 people right now living on less than 1 square mile. And we have over 6,000 children living in the refugee camp, which you don't know their future, what will happen to them. So, like 12,000 people living in the refugee camp, and we have one doctor in the United Nations clinic for 12,000. And the doctor works for 6 hours, 6 days a week, 6 hours a day. And minimum 280 patients visit the clinic. If you divide 6 hours in 280 patients, you'll find how many seconds. And some days the number increased until 400 people visit the clinic per day. The daily life in the refugee camp, it's like you are surrounded by death in everything. Water, electricity, food, surviving, and the security issue. I spent 10 years of my life behind the fence in the camp because the entire people living in my refugee camp, they were surrounded by fence for 10 years from 1985 to 1995. So right now the wall, which is like 760 kilometers, around 500 miles long, 8 meters high in Palestine, it's not something new that the Israeli building, because they built people in camps and they surrounded them by fences, not only the political prisoners, even people, children, women, adults, and they control everything there. So, by being a refugee, you have this kind of feeling inside yourself. You are less than the others. You can't practice your freedom. You can't live. Like, even with the basic needs, you need to struggle to achieve it in your daily life. At the same time, you are, when I say you are surrounded by death, I mean it. Because where you turn your face, to which direction, north, south, you will see the death surrounding you. You have the Israel incubation, you have the wall, you have the settlements, you have the oppression everywhere in your daily life. This is the daily life of Palestinian refugees.
And it's been compared to the situation of black South Africans under apartheid. What happened to the land? For example, you have written about and spoken about your uncle, who was 18 years old when the catastrophe happened in 1948. And he was taken to this camp. He spent his whole entire adult life there. What happened to the village that he came from and all of these hundreds of villages that were taken away from your people?
Yeah, actually, you mentioned about South Africa. And here, when like we read about the South African struggle, even when we meet with the South African people, and especially the people that joined the struggle and they were tortured by the apartheid system in that period. And here I'm not exaggerating at all. Even Israel, in certain ways, in their collective punishment styles, they are one step ahead, farther than the apartheid system in South Africa. And to compare that with this, yes, we Palestinians right now, we can, like, we feel disappointed by the international community. Because since 61 years until now, we didn't see any big campaign to, like what the solidarity, what was happened with the people in South Africa, which we are counting, and maybe we can speak about it later. Now, concerning what happened concerning land, yes, what I said, like 700 people, 700,000 people, more than 700,000 people, they were uprooted in 1948, and 531 villages destroyed. So right now, some villages destroyed totally. And here the plan of the ethnic cleansing, even according to Ilan Babeh book, Ilan Babeh, the Israeli professor, the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, it was a plan, and even the plan called the Plan Dalit, Plan D. First of all, to do a few massacres to scare the people. Second, to uproot the people, throw them out. Third, to destroy the villages. Fourth, to plant trees. And they plant the trees to change the reality, to change the fact. Right now, if you go to Palestine, which now if you go inside Israel, and you are seeing the forest here, like looks like part of like Vermont or Boston forest or like Europe, you see, it's nature, it's amazing. But the people, they will not realize that there were people here, living here. They will not realize that the trees used, the nature used, to hide the history of the indigenous people, of the original people. And it's the same if you go to Boston, the Abenaki land, the Native American land. And I remember when I met one of the Native American people there, they said, welcome to Abenaki land. And me, it was like, excuse me, it's Boston. They said, this is the Abenaki land. Or it's Vermont. No, this is the Abenaki land. And this is the same for me. Directly, it go down inside me. It's not Israel, it's Palestine. And what happened to my village, where my uncle, he took me, and I was naive, actually, because the moment I approached the area, I didn't see anything. And this is the Zionist plan, where the people, they will not find out that there is something there. And when we approached the village, that everything destroyed. And I told my uncle, hey, there is nothing here. He told me, wait. And we start walking, and in just in half an hour, I start seeing the village, because the history starts coming slowly, slowly, from the stones, from the trees, from the land. So the Israelis, they succeeded to destroy the houses, but they couldn't. They couldn't succeed to delete the history. And it was the first time I visited my village, and right now I know everything in my village. Even now it's empty, I can't draw it. I know where my grandparents' house, I know the steps of the house. I have pictures, actually. I filmed everything, even there, where everything there. And after that, we start taking the children to visit the village. And this is like what the Israelis, the Zionists did. They succeed to uproot the people, to throw them out, but they couldn't succeed to delete the memory inside them. And they don't know, as Ilan Babe said, that they don't know that the Arab memory, it's very deep. It's not easy to delete something from the memory. And I don't mean the Arab in general. Actually, the people living under oppression, they have very deep memory, because it's their suffering. It's not easy to forget their pain or their grandparents' pain. And they continue with that, like the Native American here or the indigenous people in Latin America. It's similar, the same way. It's not easy. No matter what you will destroy to the land, what you will build, etc., you will not destroy the memory. You can't, because it's inside the human being. And since that period, since the first visit until now, we still have programs taking our children, smuggling, because we are not allowed to be there, smuggle our children to visit and to learn about this history. And this is like you speak about 531 villages destroyed. But right now, the Palestinian became aware of their villages and aware of their right to return, back more than any time before. Even among the new generation, they were born far from their land. They never have been in their villages, but they are struggling for right to return, because they are rejecting this new identity where the world they want us to adopt. We refuse to be refugees.
We're talking to Siad Abbas. He is a Palestinian community activist, journalist, filmmaker, and he is going to be in Santa Fe on Thursday, April 23rd, and we'll give more details about when and where at the end of this program today. Now, talk more about the right of return and how you envision that. Do you envision the return, if it were politically feasible, to a village system like you had before?
Actually, here when we speak about right of return, I know the people, they think we are like very romantic or unrealistic. And it's the same for other people when they spoke about Mandela and during 70s. That Mandela who will be the leader, the president of South Africa? No, it's Mandela in the jail. He will never can be. He can't. Maybe he will die in jail. And we saw the history, actually, what happened in South Africa. We saw Mandela as a president of South Africa. We saw the South African people actually ending the apartheid system. I know the situation right now in South Africa, still there is a problem, and we need long time until we healing from the apartheid system in South Africa. But for us, the Palestinian, the same. We are learning from other people struggle, and we are learning from other people. They lived under oppression, and in the end, they succeed to end the oppression and to start their future. And actually, not just only learning, we are contributing to the history of the Palestinian, of the Arab, or sorry, of the from Palestinian perspective to the human being struggle. We are contributing through our struggle since 61 years. Now, concerning the right of return is not something like miracles. I know that people sometimes, right of return, it's like a miracle. You return back to your village after all what the Israelis built, the cities, doing all of this. How can, it's impossible to do that. But right of return is not a miracle for me. It's very simple. And it's very easy, because right of return is, first of all, the international law, the Declaration of the Human Rights, protecting my right as a human being, as a Palestinian refugee, I have the right to return back to my homeland. At the same time, I say it's very simple, because it's a United Nations resolution, and it's a very clear resolution, number 194, UN United Nations resolution, which protecting my right to return back and to receive compensation for that. So we are not speaking about something miracles coming from the sky. Other issues, we saw other people, they returned back to their homeland. We saw that in Sarajevo and Kosovo. We saw other refugees, they returned back. Even the international community helped them to return back to their homeland. We saw that in East Timor. So there were other people, they practiced. Even in Africa, we saw some people. Until now, they are working, even some refugees, to get back to their in Rwanda and other countries in Africa to return back to their homeland. But when it's coming to the Palestinian refugee, it's something different. The people, they take one step back. So when we speak about right of return, it's possible. It's possible to achieve that. It's not something difficult and hard, etc. Maybe the technical point, the practical point, how to get the people there, how to arrange, this is maybe it will take some time. But in a principle, yes, it's possible to do that. And for me, right of return is very, very, very simple. I have the right to choose where I want to live at least for one time in my life as a Palestinian refugee. This is the right to return. And me, if I have the right to choose, maybe I will choose Santa Fe. I like it, actually. Or I will choose Albuquerque. Or I will choose Stockholm in Sweden. Or I want to go back live in my village, where my parents and the grandparents.
Right. I mean, I think what's so poignant and difficult is that most of the people who knew village life at all are either very old or no longer with us in the first place. And those are the people who knew how to grow food and how to herd animals and so on, which you don't really learn if you're in a refugee camp waiting for water and the food of UNAIDS. So it would be, in a way, going to a way of life that none of you really knew in the first place, or else building something entirely new.
Yeah. I can say, I don't say like the things, it's, but I need you at the same time to know, if you go to the Palestinian houses anywhere in any refugee camp, in West Bank or in Gaza, or if you go to refugee camps in Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, you will go, they are living in very, very small houses, but you will find they are creating their own gardens. We are farmers inside ourselves. Even we are refugees that grow up in the refugee camp, but it's related. I still remember when my mom, she used to blend the cucumber or the tomato in less than half meter near my home. So the farmer, to practicing, it's not the issue here, the difficulties. I know life has changed. And life, it's like the people like more to cities. But when you speak about the majority of the Palestinian people, they are farmers, and including the Palestinian refugees. As I told you, I never worked as a farmer. Like, I didn't have my land to work as a farmer. I was working sometimes with other friends, but we are connected to the nature. We are connected to the plants. We are connected to the trees. And this is actually the big shock for Palestinian refugees, because they were, and before 1948, they were connected to their land. They are in their land. They have their connection with the land. Suddenly they became refugees living in tents. But this kind of connection with the land, it's coming generation by generation. It's the same like the key. My mom, she closed the house with the key when she uprooted from homeland. My mom passed away. I still have the key.
Right.
And the key will go to another generation. And for me, it's the same, connected to the land as a farm. Right now, what I'm missing all the time, I want to have a garden. I want to have a land where I can plant. I know maybe there are some difficulties, but the whole issue when I speak about right of return, it means that I want to be recognized as a Palestinian refugee, as I have a right to return back and to practice my right to return back to my village and to live there.
Now,
this is the meaning of right of return. Just excuse me, let me finish on this point. When I speak about right of return, it's not just the international community who protect my right or the United Nations. It's something related to me. I'm not asking anyone to leave. I don't want to ask anyone to leave. Even Israel, if they want to live there, it's okay. We can live together, but on equal basis. I want to return back to my house. And if there is a space, of course, I can live with any other Israeli around me. We can live in equal basis. We don't want to have this kind of word, pure. I don't want to have a pure state for Palestinians. No, I want to have a state for anyone who will respect me and deal with me as an equal basis. Look, for this, the problem with Zionism, they want to have a pure Jewish state. Even recently, Netanyahu, he spoke with Mitchell, the U.S. envoy into the Middle East. There is a condition that he will start the negotiation with the Palestinians when the Palestinians recognize the Judaism of recognize Israel as a Jewish state, and the state only for Jewish people. We don't want to have this. We want to have a country where everyone can practice their religion and living in equal basis. At the same time, where all Palestinian refugees will have the right to return back to their homes. And it's up to them. They choose. But in any way, if they want to live in America, they can live in America. But any time they want to go back, they can't do that. Because if you go to Brooklyn and in New York, you will find the Jewish people there, living there. They have Israel citizenship, and they spent half of the year in settlements in West Bank, and half of the year they are living in Brooklyn. So what we are asking, right to retain, it means that I am recognized as a Palestinian. I am equal like everyone. I can choose where I want to live, and I can access that.
Now, there's a great difference of opinion among Israeli people on the Palestinian situation. Have you made alliances with Israeli groups?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some Israelis, of course, they realized, look, this is a history, 61 years. Some Israelis, of course, they wake up, hey, you can't continue oppressing other people. You need to find such kind of compromise in a way or another. And here when I speak of compromise, we Palestinians, we did the compromise. The Israelis, they want to give up some privileges. We did the compromise in our rights when we accept to live on equal basis. But for them, they would need to give up some of their privileges and at the same time to end their ideology, to stop their ideology oppressing other people, like to have a pure Jewish state. And of course, there are some Israelis, no doubt. They took their own initiatives and they start speaking out. We should end the Israeli occupation. Some groups, they speak about ending Israeli occupation. Some groups speak about two-state solutions. Some groups, which there are a few groups inside Israel, and I can see people, individuals, they start speaking about one state solution for everyone. Absolutely, this is a history, but you know, the problem with Israel and the result of the Israeli election show what's going on in Israel right now. The right wings and the fascism growing up in this community, even some of the Israeli people belonging to the left or belong to the one-state solution. Even some of them belong to the states, two-state solutions. They left the country. They don't live in Israel anymore. They don't want to live. They don't feel secure for their future because they are controlled by right-wing government and controlled by, Zionism, which still occupying other people, oppressing other people. Yeah, I can say, just to answer your question very clear way, there are some people, there are smaller groups, especially like a group called Zacharot. And Zacharot, it's like a group, Jewish and Palestinian, Israelis and Palestinian working together from 1948 from inside Israel for right of return and struggling to protect the Palestinian history in the destroyed villages, to protect that, which some of the Israelis, they are part of this group. But I can't say until now I can count on them to change. They are still... They are still not strong enough, and the result of the Israeli election, the last election, showed that the left going back and the right wings grow up inside the Israeli community. And this is actually the right picture to describe the Israeli occupation. The right wings became more clear and clear, and they are growing up because this is Zionism, and this is the education of Zionism, which is like, for me, Zionism equal racism, only for Jewish people. The others, no one care about the other people.
We're talking to Ziad Abbas, who will be here in Santa Fe on Thursday, April 23rd in the evening. Now, what is the nature of the Palestinian resistance movement? I mean, over here we hear about rocket attacks against Israel, but not a whole lot more. What else is happening?
Palestinian people, like any other people or any other nation, they experienced occupations or oppression. If we go to Vietnam, go to India, if we go to North Island, if we go to South Africa or Algeria or Latin America, we have our own, like, the resistance, different styles. Of course, the nature of the Palestinian resistance, we have different And it's not like different styles, I mean, but it's not different from any other nation. We are not bringing anything new, like using different styles. We are, according to the international law, according to the international the Declaration of the Human Rights, according to the United Nations, any people living under oppression, they have the right to struggle to end their oppression. And the way they find it, it's possible to do it. So we have the people, they are like Palestinian people, they are struggling, like, for example, in cultural issue, where they try to protect their Palestinian culture. They use the music, the dance, the heritage, the folklore, educate the new generation, connect the new generation with our identity as a Palestinian, to protect our identity, because the Israeli occupation tried to destroy this identity, to delete this identity, and they tried to dilute, actually, the content of our identity, and to steal our part of our identity and part of our culture. For example, you hear about hummus. You know hummus food?
Yes.
Yeah, now they are saying this is Israeli food. You know falafel.
Right.
You know za'atar. Za'atar is one of the plants that grew up in the Middle East, and especially in Palestine, and it's connected to the Palestinian folklore. Now they steal za'atar. They start this is Israeli traditional food. So they try to destroy, dilute your identity, and this is part of the struggle where you try to protect. And this is the part, actually, where I used to work in Ibda Culture Center in Dehesha refugee camp through our dancing group, through our children. Music, dance, theater, painting, arts, where we try to represent and to protect our identity. Other people, other Palestinians, they struggle, actually. They use the direct struggle, which we call direct action, when they believe in the armed struggle and try to use the armed struggle as a tactic in certain periods, on certain stages, to serve the other goals. Other people, they believe in popular resistance. And sometimes you find the people using all, yani one person using all the styles together, like what we saw in the first intifada and the second intifada. So the nature of the resistance, of Palestinian people resistance, it's nature, it's normal, it's not something different. But here the problem in this country, especially United States of America, that the media, they try to use the Palestinian struggle and they try to describe them as a terrorist. And right now, the moment, all the time when you introduce yourself as a Palestinian, you can see the other reaction of the other people. Hey, I am what they consider as terrorist, but here I am struggling for my freedom. I am struggling to be equal like everyone. And we Palestinians in general, they use different kind of styles like any other nation living under the oppression.
So Hamas got elected, and one of the results of that is that you have other countries like the United States that wish that they hadn't and try not to even recognize them at all. And you, as Palestinian people, are basically represented by two different groups. There's a rift. It's difficult. What is it like from the inside to have Palestinian people politically divided in this way?
Okay, concerning what Hamas, if we want to go back to the history, and here it's like it's long history. Hamas grew up because, I am not accused Hamas, I'm not attacking, which many writers and many people, they wrote that. I'm not attacking anyone in this case. But Hamas, when BLO, they were representing the Palestinian people and using the resistance in 70s, the Israelis, they attacked BLO in Lebanon in 1982. They tried to destroy the Palestinian Liberation Movement, BLO. And they did the massacre, actually, in Sabra and Shatila. And at the same time, they were attacking the Palestinian leadership in that period and the Palestinian representative body, the BLO, in Lebanon. They were encouraging Hamas because they were looking for other alternative for the BLO. So they were supporting the Islamic movements in that period. And they were supporting the Islamic institution because they want to have another leadership. Now, after the first intifada, when Hamas shifted and became the Islamic resistance movement, and they start believing in resistance against the Israeli occupation and using, practicing us that, of course, the Israelis, they start to be against them. And later on, after Oslo agreement, and this is the problem, when I said Oslo, it's another catastrophe for the Palestinians, because the Zionist plan, which moved toward Oslo agreement, and the United States supported that as usual. And part of the Palestinian community, I can say part of the Palestinian leadership, I don't want to say community, Palestinian leadership, they accepted to be part of the sublime, and they thought maybe it will lead to something good for Palestinians, because Oslo, it's destroyed the Palestinian people. So Hamas here, they continue their struggle with the resistance, and they start to grow up. When BLO leadership, or part of the leadership of BLO, who controlled BLO, moved toward Oslo agreement, the people, they were living in the ground under the Israeli occupation. They signed the agreement in 1993, but they see how the Israeli occupation treating the Palestinians. They confiscated land from Palestine in 7 years, between 1993 to 2000, more than during the war period. And during the peace period, the Israelis confiscated land from Palestinians more than the war period. More people in jail, more checkpoints, the wall, more harassment. Which peace you speak about? And absolutely, here Hamas, they start, continue with their resistance movement against the Israeli occupation. And at the same time, when part of BLO, and especially the leadership, start using them, moved from the revolution leadership to, like, what they call it, Palestinian Authority, living in special way, supported by the moderate, like you call them, the moderate leadership. Because this is the leadership the Israelis or the Zionist movement looking for. At the same time, the American and the European leaders, they want to have this kind of leadership. So they divided the CMBU. Hamas, absolutely, they are connected to the grassroots, and they were elected in the election in January 2006. And the second day, no one recognized them. All the world, I can see, or most of these countries, especially United States of America, part of Europe, and Israel, they banished the Palestinian people for their choice. The American Bush in that period imposing on Palestinian, they should have election.
Right.
And they didn't recognize the result of the election. And
right.
The popularity of Hamas actually growing up, because the way how they treat Hamas, and the way how Hamas connected to the ground and connected to the Palestinian struggle, at the same time, the people, they are the popularity of Hamas, even among the Christian community in Palestine. In 2006, even some towns, the majority they are Christian, Hamas got the won the election there. It's not the question of religion here. The question, the people, they are searching for real peace plan. They don't want to be deceived like what happened in 1993 by signing Oslo Agreement.
I'd like to turn now to Jeff Haas, who has been sitting here very quietly with us, and he is with a group called Another Jewish Voice of Santa Fe. That's a grassroots organization, and I wanted to ask you, do you see groups like this that are progressive Jewish groups, or by and large Jewish groups, that are questioning really strongly the policies of Israel? Do you see this as a nationwide movement?
Absolutely, I do. And I think it's gone from merely questioning the morality of what Israel has done to beginning to take action to expose what Israel is doing and to try to get the United States from stopping from giving military aid to Israel. For a long time, I think moral Jews have had questions about what Israel's been doing. And as Mr. Abbas pointed out, there's sort of two histories here, the victim and the victimizer. And to many of us, being Jewish means identity with the oppressed. It means justice and equality. It does not mean retribution. And therefore, we don't accept that Israel has the right to oppress Palestinians any more than that the Nazis, of course, had the right to destroy the Jewish communities in Europe. And so we believe that, in fact, it is part of our Jewish heritage, part of our Jewish humanism, that we're now saying, wait a minute, what Israel is doing is not acceptable merely because it's Jews who are doing it. And yes, there is a national movement. There's several national organizations. J Street is one. The American Jewish AJJC is a group of organizations. Just here in New Mexico, we have another Jewish voice of Albuquerque that's been speaking out, and we're another Jewish voice of Santa Fe. And we've actually come together with other groups to form a coalition to stop the $30 billion that the United States has promised to Israel over the next 10 years. AIPAC was able to get the Congress to agree to give $30 billion to Israel over the next 10 years, 76% of which would have to be military weapons bought from the United States. No other country has this kind of agreement. So not only do we feel as Jews responsible for what Israel is doing, as Americans we feel like we are allowing it to happen. And I don't think Israel is good. We don't feel that Israel is going to change as long as they have this carte blanche, as long as they feel that they can be militarily superior. And it's a very dangerous movement that's going on in Israel right now. The rise of the right wing, the idea that they are superior to the Palestinians is not so different than what the Germans talked about the Jews.
Well, I mean, when Mr. Abbas was just saying a moment ago that they want to be a pure state, that word purity has sort of sinister overtones.
Absolutely it does. And it's interesting that they more and more of the some of the symbolisms that the Nazis used are being used by Israel. And when Hitler and Germany first, when Germany first rose to power and wanted to be a colonial power, they said they wanted their place in the sun. And when Netanyahu, the new president of Israel, wrote a book, he talked about Israel's getting its place in the sun.
Oh boy!
So there are a lot of connections. And one of the things that's been pointed out that it's also, I think, particularly distressful is that this movement in Israel to the right is not just some of the religious people, but many of the youth who went and were in Gaza, came back not perturbed or upset about what they saw or did, but wanting to do more, wanting to escalate the ethnic cleansing that Mr. Abbas has talked about.
So it's just about time to go. I want to let people know that Ziad Abbas will be here in Santa Fe on Thursday night, the 23rd of April. There's a reception at 6:30 and a talk at 7 o'clock, followed by a discussion at the Center for Spiritual Living at 505 Camino de los Marques here in Santa Fe. There's a suggested donation. And for more information, people can call the telephone number 505-820-6476. And this is a fundraiser for Gaza and the Ibda Cultural Center in the West Bank, which unfortunately we didn't have time to talk about right now, but which Ziad Abbas will tell us about on Thursday night. Mr. Abbas, thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Jeff. Thanks.
And thanks to you, Jeff Haas, of Another Jewish Voice of Santa Fe.
And thank you, Mr. Abbas, and thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Nick Appalucci for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, the Jazz Experience. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.